Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 21 of the ZU Cast, or ZooCast as I like to call it. I'm Amanda Van Heil. I'm going to be hosting today, and I'm joined by my very dear friend, Alex Rosenberg.
ZooCast, what's up?
Hello.
It's been a while since we've done a podcast together. I think the last one was like, what, early 2020?
I think so. I'm trying to think of, yeah, I think that's been the last time you and I have done this one together.
I think it was the Cats one that we ended up doing a gigantic Cats rant at the end.
Yes.
Because you got to see it with Elias.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yep. That's what happens when you get two theater people into a room. But we have a good roundup of content today. First of all, Shona is going to round out the end of Zelda history, talking about 2016 to 2020, which, dear God, all the stuff that was Zelda history at that period was like part of my tenure at ZU as a leader. And I'm just like, oh, God, it's been a long time.
Well, next we've got Randy talking about the best Zelda-like games of 2021.
Which is going to be really good because there's a lot of stuff, especially recently, that kind of fits into that sort of vein. Then have Connor with his segment about the Ocarina of Time randomizer, which, boy, do I have a lot of thoughts about because of things. We'll get there.
Oh, yeah, me too. And then we've got the Waterfall of Wishing trading sequences, and this is with Joshua. He may be a new segment host, but he has been with Zelda Universe, what, since the beginning? Just about?
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. Joshua does a lot of stuff behind the scenes for ZU. He is kind of one of the main people that kind of like run the site, and he does do a lot of stuff now on camera and on mic, which is cool. And this is one of the new things that he's doing, which is very exciting.
Yeah, it's good that he's starting to get in the spotlight now. It's definitely well earned.
Oh, 100%. And then we get into our favorite part, credits and bloopers. You love them.
Bloopers from us, never.
What? No, we're so professional. But let's dive directly in, and not waste any more time, with the final part of Zelda history with Shona.
Hello, Zelda fans. My name is Shona Johnson, and in this segment, I'll be exploring some of the history of the Zelda franchise. For the past several episodes of this podcast, I've been running through the 35 years of Zelda's history in five-year blocks, and today brings us to the final block, the years 2016 to 2020. In 2016, Nintendo celebrated the 30th anniversary of Zelda. It wasn't as big as the 25th anniversary, but still gave us a few goodies. This included a special line of amiibo, an art book, and a series of concerts in Japan. The art book was Art and Artifacts, and it featured tons of artwork, interviews with artists, and previously unreleased content. Two previous Zelda games were re-released this year. Hyrule Warriors was ported to the 3DS and called Hyrule Warriors Legends. It added some new story content and characters. This included a character called Linkle, who was designed to be a female version of Link. The idea of a female Link had been a long-running source of debate in the Zelda community. When the art book for the original Hyrule Warriors revealed that she had been considered, but later scrapped from the game, the idea of her character proved popular enough among fans that she was added into Legends. 2016 also gave us an HD version of Twilight Princess for the Wii U. Like other remasters, it featured enhanced graphics and changes to some gameplay features, along with a more challenging hero mode. Now, we hadn't heard much about the Wii U Zelda game for a while, but it was the star of the show at E3 in 2016, where its title was revealed, Breath of the Wild. Nintendo's booth was themed around the game, and a demo was playable at the show. By then, the game had been delayed several times, but the final release date was revealed in January 2017. It released simultaneously on the Wii U and Nintendo's brand new console, the Switch, on March the 3rd that year. Breath of the Wild was an instant success. Nintendo had spoken previously about challenging Zelda conventions, and the game was indeed quite different to most Zelda games before it. It encouraged a non-linear approach, with multiple solutions to various problems, and asked players to explore and experiment to find ways to do things. Social media lit up with a schoolyard-like buzz as players discovered innovative, challenging, or outright hilarious ways to do things. Even today, news still pops up from time to time about some previously undiscovered trick or mechanic in the game. There were some fans, however, who found Breath of the Wild a little too different and said that it didn't feel like a Zelda game. But overall, it won multiple awards and went on to become the highest-selling Zelda game of all time. Another big Zelda book was released in Japan in 2017, The Legend of Zelda Encyclopedia. Designed to complement Hyrule Historia and Art and Artifacts, it contains a visual encyclopedia, a list of things such as items and enemies, and details about each game in the series. The English version, which released in 2018, actually contains a number of errors, which are detailed on the website zeldawiki.org. In 2018, the Symphony of the Goddesses, the Zelda concert that had been touring worldwide since 2012, announced that it would be taking a break and wouldn't be touring that year. The wording of the announcement left things open for the future, but at this point in time, there's been no further news about the symphony, and its website now redirects to Nintendo.com. Due to its success, and that of other video game-themed concerts, I wouldn't be surprised if it was revived someday. Hyrule Warriors was again ported in 2018, this time to the Switch, as Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition, which featured all of the content from Hyrule Warriors and Hyrule Warriors Legends. 2018 also saw the release of the most recent, at least to date, Super Smash Bros. Game. Called Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, it featured every fighter that had appeared in past Smash Bros. Games, along with some new ones. No new Zelda characters were added, but Young Link, who had been replaced by Toon Link in the past couple of installments, made a return, alongside his Toon and regular counterparts. The game added a new mechanic called Spirits, which could be used to power up fighters, and dozens of Zelda characters and enemies appeared as spirits. Having seen success after allowing Capcom and Koei Tecmo to work with the Zelda property, Nintendo allowed an independent game developer, Brace Yourself Games, access to the Zelda IP to develop Cadence of Hyrule for the Switch, a surprise spin-off game announcement from 2019. It was a crossover with their original game, Crypt of the Necrodancer, and featured rhythm-based gameplay and musical instruments as gameplay mechanics. The overworld and dungeons are randomly generated, making each playthrough unique. One of Cadence's highlights is its soundtrack, which features remixes of several classic Zelda tunes. Link's Awakening was the next classic Zelda title to be given the remake treatment, with the 1993 Game Boy Classic completely remade for the Nintendo Switch in 2019. Instead of using sprite-based graphics like the original, it adopted a diorama-like art style that was fully modelled in 3D. It gave the game a modern update and some new features, but still remained very faithful to the original. We all knew by now that Nintendo loved a good E3 announcement, and at E3 in 2019, Nintendo revealed that a sequel to Breath of the Wild was in development. This announcement was accompanied by a short teaser trailer that showed Link and Zelda exploring an underground cavern and stumbling upon Ganondorf's corpse. Eiji Aonuma said that the idea for a sequel had come about when Nintendo had far too many ideas for Breath of the Wild DLC. But fans hoping for more news about the Breath of the Wild sequel in 2020 were left disappointed as Nintendo remained quiet on the Zelda front for most of the year. It wasn't until late in the year that they made a surprise announcement, a new Hyrule Warriors game that was a prequel to Breath of the Wild. Hyrule Warriors: Age of Calamity released in November and featured the same combat-intensive hack-and-slash gameplay as Hyrule Warriors, and allowed players to control multiple characters in addition to Link. It tells the story of Hyrule's Great Calamity, 100 years prior to the events in Breath of the Wild. Well, an alternate version of it anyway. Overall, the 2010s didn't see as many brand new Zelda games as the previous decade, but had a slew of spin-offs, remakes and re-releases to carry fans over between major releases, making it a pretty great decade overall for Zelda fans. So, what will the 2020s bring? That's a great question, and one we may revisit in the future. 2021's already shown us some great stuff, and we have high hopes for things to come. Nintendo has never been afraid to experiment and innovate when it comes to Zelda, and I expect that to continue. I'm also certain that we'll be here in the future, celebrating the 40th, 45th, 50th, and many, many more Zelda anniversaries. Thanks so much for journeying with me through the series' history. It's been fun to explore where the series has been, and it revisit all its high and low points. As always, please share your own favourite Zelda memories with us in the comments, or let us know where you think the series will be going in the future. This is Shona Johnson signing off for now, and may the way of the hero lead to the Triforce.
Thanks, Shona. My God, Breath of the Wild's 5 years old this year. Ha!
Oh my gosh. That means 5 years ago, you and I and a bunch of the others were staying up for 48 hours playing Breath of the Wild for the first time.
My God, Zeuthon's also 5 years old this year? Oh, jeez. But it's also weird, too, because like I also remember my first E3 going to the Zelda Symphony. I think it was with Cephazon. And I remember purely 100% enjoying the Zelda Symphony. Do you feel like the symphonies are going to come back anytime soon? Like once all the pandemic stuff has kind of subsided a bit?
I mean, I hope so. I'd love to see more like live performances. I remember seeing the Zelda Symphony when it came to Atlanta, and then I saw it again the following year. So I've seen it twice here. There was one year that I saw it. One day was the Zelda Symphony, and then the next at one theater, and then the theater that I worked at did the Final Fantasy Symphony, like, the following day. So it was kind of neat.
Oh,
it was
nice.
And it just happened to be, like, the week of E3. And so it was just kind of neat having all that going on at once. And that was the year I joined Zelda Universe. I joined Zelda Universe, like, a week after that.
Oh, so it was like, 2013, because we joined, like... What, within 3 months of each other or something
like that? Yeah, because you had just graduated high school, I think.
Yeah, I was like a week out of high school when I joined. It was June 2013.
Yeah, same here.
But there's also, like, I forgot that, like, they added Linkle to Hyrule Warriors for a while.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about her.
I mean, I also forgot a lot about... I have such a love-hate relationship with the Warriors games.
I loved Age of Calamity. I absolutely loved Age of Calamity.
I enjoyed Age of Calamity. I feel like I went in with wrong expectations.
I think I had low expectations, which is why I enjoyed it as much as I did.
I went in with a Rogue One kind of mindset, and that was not the game that we got.
Gotcha.
And so I feel like I was slightly underwhelmed, but also it's one of the game that, you know, the expansion pass came out. Did I buy the expansion pass? No.
Oh, crap. I haven't done that either.
Yeah,
I probably should.
The problem is, it's like I can only do so much of that kind of game button mashing before I just kind of get bored.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I think, where I'm at with Hyrule Warriors and stuff like that. It's unfortunate, but yeah. And then I completely also forgot, like, yeah, we now have different versions of Link's Awakening now available because we have the remake, which I think is really good. But then it's also on the Zelda Game & Watch, which I am surprised they did that over, like, A Link to the Past.
I feel like A Link to the Past is, like, is that longer than Link's Awakening? Are they really about the same?
Can you really compare length for both games? Because I don't feel like either of those games are particularly long. I actually think, at least A Link to the Past, this might be because I also do a lot of the randomizers. A Link to the Past is not a long game.
I was going to say, like, people speedrun that one. Like,
Elias speedruns it regularly. I just started doing the randomizers for that.
So, yeah, it is surprising. But I guess they probably figured that, like, A Link to the Past could be, like, its own thing, maybe.
Perhaps. Oh, God, are we going to get another one of them this year? Oh,
oh wow. That would be neat.
Yeah, let's add it to the list of other Zelda games I need to play or other games that are similar to it.
Exactly.
Which, speaking of that, let's move on to Randy's segment talking about the best Zelda-like games of 2021.
"2021 has come and now is done. It was a weird, wild year for video games. Over the year, we received a trailer showing some more of the World of Breath of the Wild sequel. There was the Skyward Sword remake and the cute little Zelda Game & Watch gizmo. But what was the best Zelda of 2021? This is where if I were a clickbaity article, I'd tell you that the answer might surprise you, because I don't think it was a game that had Zelda in the name. Hi, I'm Randy Marr, Assistant News Editor at Zelda Universe. If you've been checking out our podcasts, and you likely recognize the quiet cacophony that is my voice, then you've heard me talk extensively about what is and isn't a Zelda game, as well as other things that are Zelda-like. Obviously, if it has the name Zelda in the title, more or less, it is a Zelda game. If that's the case, and we're just talking about strictly Zelda games, the little Game & Watch wins because it's a cool little gizmo and Link's Awakening is on it. However, if we expand our search to include Zelda-like games, I think this is where it gets potentially more interesting because I don't think the best game was a Zelda game. First off, let's talk about the actual Zelda games that came out. We saw Skyward Sword HD, the remake of 2011's mainline Zelda game. Waggle from Twilight Princess had been traded in for a more accurate attempt at replicated one-to-one motion control. An unfortunate victim of that was the cool IR pointer for aiming things like your bow and arrow, and it added the unfortunate motion drift problem. These problems still exist in Skyward Sword HD, although the new control screen does help circumvent these, plus you can play it on the go. The game's awesome art style still really comes through in HD, and of course the wonderful cast of characters are all there telling the same pretty awesome story. Skyward Sword is a very solid game, and this is the best version of it, to be sure. But is it the best Zelda-like game? If nothing else, it is certainly the most Zelda-like game. The Zelda Game & Watch Gizmo also came out to help celebrate the series' 35th anniversary. It's a little toy with some silly features. It comes loaded with the original NES Zelda, Adventures of Link, and Link's Awakening. Interestingly, this is the first time Link's Awakening has been redistributed since it originally came out in the Game Boy. Usually we see the DX version if we ever see it again. Also of note, all three games include different regional versions, allowing you to see what other regions got in their game. If you're not sure why that's kind of cool, go look up a book called Legends of Localization, or just look up some YouTube videos about the regional differences between the US and PAL and Japanese version of the Zelda game. There's a lot of cool little differences that I find personally very fascinating. It's a retro Zelda-packed little platform, also has a clock and a Game & Watch game. The fact that it has Link's Awakening on it, though, probably makes it the best Zelda game on here, because that is one of my all-time favorite Zeldas. But some of these non-Zeldas also have a lot of new stuff to bring to the table, as opposed to these remakes and repackages. Death's Door is a pretty strong contender, although it errs a bit more on the side of a Dark Souls than a Zelda, especially in terms of combat mechanics. The art is very striking, its combat is very good. It's not the most Zelda-like game, it's kind of maybe the least, but I think it's enough in the space that we should talk about it and mention it, and something I would recommend to Zelda players. Next up is The Outer Wilds, Echoes of the Eye. You may have heard me ramble at one point or another on this podcast that The Outer Wilds is one of, if not my favorite game of the last decade, if not longer. It is inspired by Zelda on the surface level and on design levels. There's no combat, but the nature of the exploration, the progress, the way you pull apart the world and find new goodies and secrets, it's all very Zelda or Breath of the Wild, and it's all kind of painted with this tone that fits Majora's Mask. You know, if you like Majora's Mask and just sort of the way that world feels and the melancholy associated with it, I really cannot recommend that you play The Outer Wilds more. Now, that came out in 2019. Last year, they released the Echoes of the Eye DLC. Again, it's not a standalone game, but its self-contained story within that game is important enough that it still needs mentioned. The DLC inserts itself into the galaxy of the Outer Wilds in a pretty clever way, and once you get to that section, you're exploring a whole new area that comes complete with new story, puzzles, and the exciting addition of pure terror. All the design that made the original Outer Wilds so compelling is all there, but with new content, twists, and stories that proves that lightning can strike twice if you're clever enough. It's slathered in this kitschy mountain vibe, haunting stories, and soul-crunching melancholy. It's an absolute must if you are a Zelda fan. It also did not come out last year, but Genshin Impact continues to pump out content for itself and was there all of 2021. I don't think it's particularly the best, but I do feel it's important to at least say the name out loud, so here we go. Genshin Impact. Awesome. Chicory is the last game of this list, coming in pretty late in the year, but still swinging heavy. Most styled like A Link to the Past, this top-down game features an open map to explore as a dog that the player names, armed with a magical paintbrush. It is not the first dog who paints Zelda-like game out there, but it definitely wants to do its own gimmicks. You return color to the world while dealing with people's problems and upgrading your paintbrush. It's fairly light on the combat, preferring to focus more on puzzle solving and light platforming. It kind of plays like it were an adult coloring book, and often asks the player to just slow down and fill in the environment or paint a picture and really just kind of settle in and be more meditative than maybe most Zelda games. It also covers some surprisingly personal themes such as imposter syndrome, the act of being a creator, the act of someone who follows favorite creators, as well as just the general relationship between us and our art. It's incredibly poignant, and I really cannot recommend this game enough. It's colorful, it's funny, but it doesn't pull its punches on the pitfalls of being a person in this world who creates art. And there they are, your 2021 Zelda-like nominees. It's not a very big list, but these are the ones I managed to get to over the last year. Honestly, I tell you, pretty much each and every one of them is an incredible game that you should go check out. If you have access to something like Game Pass as a service, most of them can be found on there. I probably spoiled it a little bit while I was talking about all these, but Outer Wilds Echoes of the Eye would be my pick for the best Zelda-like game this year. Chicory coming in at a very close second, but again, these are just the ones that I played. These do not reflect the views of anyone else at this site. I just happen to be the idiot that has a podcast segment, so I get to tell you about it. I highly recommend you go play all of these games and come up with your own opinions and you know, share your favorites. Really just make 2022 about playing really cool games. And looking ahead at the rest of 2022, we already have some pretty good Zelda and Zelda-adjacent games lining up. I've just started taking a peek at a game called Nobody Saves the World, and it's a pretty strong contender early on. It's a very Link to the Past style game, but there's a major focus on like filling bars and doing quick snappy quests. Really kind of hits some pleasure centers of my video gamey brain. It's done by Drinkbox Studio, the people that did Guacamelee. So it's a pretty strong pedigree for people that make games that are like Nintendo games that we love. This also might be the year that Tunic graces us with its pointy green hat. This little game about a fox rolling around has very Zelda-like style to it. Curious to see kind of what they do for themselves. I've been watching this game for what feels like eternity, but there's a lot of strong indication this will be the year we finally get it. Of course, the sequel to Breath of the Wild drifts just on the horizon and will be in our hands before we know it. I do love some games that are Zelda adjacent, but it's really going to be hard for to find one of those that manages to beat a straight up Zelda game, a brand new Zelda game, and especially one that's the sequel to my favorite Zelda, Breath of the Wild. But it's going to be a long year, so we have plenty of time to find out. I want to thank you again for joining me on another podcast segment. I kind of like doing this. I think for some future segments, I might go and talk about best Zelda-like games of previous years. In either case, I look forward to presenting to you then as well, and I hope you'll be around to hang out with us. For now, though, thank you very much for your time, and I'm going to pass it back to our podcast hosts. Hello, podcast hosts.
So that was Randy's best Zelda-like games. You know what I like is how anytime you see an open world game, especially on the Switch, like especially with that art style, everybody's like, oh, it's a Breath of the Wild style game. Like Legends Arceus, which I know technically came out this year and not 2021, but I'm still claiming it.
Okay, but here's best. The other thing too, is I think every open world game, because of how well it did in general,
well, for the longest time it was Skyrim. Everything was like, oh, it's just like Skyrim. I'm like, thank God they're comparing it to something that's not Skyrim.
Well, Persona 5 is also on that list too. Yeah, everyone compares things to Persona 5 and it's just like, no.
Any jazz music, oh, this has some Persona vibes. It's like, well, yes, because it's jazz funk.
What, did you not see B-movie? Did you not understand you like jazz? Jeez.
You know, Hanson would do amazing at the Persona music because I was like listening to some of it. I'm dead serious because that is kind of their style.
I know you're dead serious. When you talk about Hanson, you're always dead serious.
Yeah, that is their style. They would absolutely kill it at the Persona 5 soundtrack.
I'd like to see it. No, I actually agree with you on Legends Arceus because I don't know if Monolith helped with Legends Arceus, but like when you pick up like items and materials, there is a absolute Breath of the Wild like influence in it.
Well, it even had just the background music alone, like how it has just that ambient sound.
The background music, the UI, there's a lot of Breath of the Wild influence in Arceus, which I appreciate to a degree. It's one of those games where we're in the exact same place right now in the game. So
yeah,
it's a lot of running around, a lot of crafting. I feel like I'm running into more slight roadblocks of things, mostly just because I'm bad at throwing Pokeballs, but besides the point.
I keep accidentally letting go of the button, and so then I would keep wasting Pokeballs.
Same. Now, here's my question for you. What do you think is the absolute best Zelda that is not a Zelda? That is not like Arceus or anything like that?
Star Fox Adventures.
Nice.
I love Star Fox Adventures. It is so cheesy, but I love it.
What about it gives you that Zelda vibe?
Well, it was built, I think, on the same engine as... Or not engine. It was, like, built using, like, Ocarina of Time, like, I don't know, assets? I don't know the words for it. All I know is there was actual, like, Ocarina of Time influence on it. But, like, it plays exactly like a Zelda game. Like, the puzzles are the same as Zelda puzzles. Like, even just the mechanics, the overall, like, fighting mechanics and, like, jumping mechanics, also Zelda. So I consider it one of my favorite Zelda games.
It's funny that you chose that too and not like Okami, which is like a...
Ugh.
Everyone thinks is a... Okay, you need to explain that.
I know. I don't hate Okami. I just don't love Okami.
It's a long game. It's a very long game.
Everything looks the same. I keep getting lost.
It's kind of a Metroidvania thing in a way, too, because you have to do a lot of backtracking in that game, if I recall correctly.
It goes on forever. Like, that last dragon boss, I said, how many times do we have to fight that dragon boss with the seven heads? Like, 3 times?
Oh, Orochi? Did Emil even finish his Let's Play of it?
I don't know.
I feel like we're still missing a video of that at some point. I don't know.
All I know is anytime I say I don't love Okami, it's just I'm just met with, what do you mean you don't love Okami? Okami is the greatest Zelda game that's not a Zelda game. Like, it's all right. Like,
it's a good game. I think it's a good game. It's just it's very long. I will also submit Ghost of Tsushima is the best Breath of the Wild game that isn't a Zelda game and you cannot change my mind.
I still need to play that.
You absolutely need to play it. I will say, you know how the opening of Breath of the Wild gives you, like, tears, like, because of, like, that vista and stuff like that? I had the exact same experience watching the opening sequence of Ghost of Tsushima. It is, like, getting into where you see the title, like, the game title card. It is incredible. The performances and voice acting is fantastic. There's also a Kurosawa mode. The update when the director's cut gave Japanese lip sync. As well, and there's an Iki Island expansion that came out in 2021.
Isn't that where you pet foxes?
Well, you could pet foxes originally, but now you can pet cats.
Oh.
And it's a beautiful game. It runs great on PS5. It's an easy platinum, and it's a really, 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 really good game. Also, Lauren Tom of, like, Friends and Kids Next Door fame is also in the game.
Oh, neat.
Which is, like, really cool. But the performances are just absolutely top-notch in Ghost. And I highly recommend it if you have a PS4 or a PS5. Just go get it. It's good.
I have both. So, success. I can do that.
Great success. And then also, there's a lot of stuff coming out. Like as Randy mentioned, Tunic is coming out in March. Did you play the demo of that?
I have not played the demo of it. Like, I remember seeing it. I want to say I saw it at PAX one year.
Yeah, because it was at PAX a lot. And then when because they opened the Game Awards with that announcement, and then they had a demo go out that weekend.
And it looks so cute. I didn't realize, like, the demo was... I honestly did not realize the demo was out. So... Or that there was a demo.
Yeah,
so.
There was a demo for like a couple of days because it looks like they removed it. But it was a little bit difficult, but it looked really, really, really good.
I just think it looks so cute.
With like a lineage of Zelda with its 35 plus years, there's so many games that are going to be able to look at it and take influence. And they should, because of how important the Zelda franchise is as a whole.
It's, I mean, when people say it revolutionized gaming, like, that's not an exaggeration. It really
did. It's a fact. Yeah, it defined the action adventure genre, and even like with Breath of the Wild, it is kind of redefining what it is to do open world in a way, which I'm interested to see where they go from there for Breath of the Wild 2, but also to see where other things change. Like, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn launched like 3 days before Breath of the Wild did, which yep. I actually thought was kind of unfortunate for Horizon.
I know, like, I feel like Breath of the Wild, like, launched and Horizon Zero Dawn, like, already had, like, the launch date, and then they're like, oh, Breath of the Wild also, and it's like, well, this is just gonna kill that game.
But it didn't kill that game, and Forbidden West comes out this month.
Oh, does it really? When does it come out?
The 18th, I believe.
Okay.
And it will be interesting to see if we notice some things that maybe Guerrilla saw with Breath of the Wild, and see how that maybe integrates itself a little bit into Forbidden West. I don't think a lot will have been implemented because they have their own world, but it'll be kind of interesting to see what that does and maybe have that kind of go into it, because they are very similar games in a semi sort of scope.
Yeah, they really are. There's a lot of similarities, and it's just so funny just playing Legends Arceus. I feel like I'm playing Breath of the Wild and Horizon Zero Dawn and Pokemon all in one game.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't necessarily know if I'd want it to be a staple for Pokemon as a whole, because I still really love that traditional Pokemon, like, gameplay.
Oh, me too.
And I think I'm, like, one of the very few people who think that. But it is a new twist that I haven't decided whether or not I fully like yet.
I'm really enjoying it. I like the change. You know, I, of course, will want the original style, and I love the original style, and I always will. But this makes me just kind of feel like I'm in Pokemon, and I really like that.
Yeah. So, we'll see. We'll see how much more Zelda influence we see throughout, you know, 2022 into 2023, for sure. With that, though, let's go into our next segment, which is all about the Ocarina of Time randomizer with our boy Connor.
You're an expert on that.
I know. We'll talk about that in a second, but we'll let Connor take it from here.
There's a wonderful feeling you get when you revisit a favorite game. Small details you never noticed before suddenly take center stage. Powerful moments hit you that much harder. Everything you loved about it and more take over your senses, reminding you why you loved that game in the first place. But let's be honest, after a few playthroughs, most of the challenge of a lot of those games tends to drop off pretty quickly. Sure, you can up the difficulty setting, but smaller health bars and tougher opponents can still get repetitive after a while. And if you don't have that option, even self-imposed challenges can only give you so much when you know exactly what to look for. So, short of erasing your memories of the game so you can play it for the first time all over again, something we all wish we could do once or twice, how do you give an old favorite new life? One way that I've discovered is to take the classic elements, setting, and gameplay, dump it into a blender, and throw it out into the world to see just where everything ends up. My name is Connor Schultz, and this is Peace of Heart. I got pulled into a popular Zelda trend a few months back. During ZU-thon last year, I watched seriously for the first time a couple playthroughs of The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. But instead of the normal story and progression of young Link leaving the Kokiri Forest to meet the princess before slowly making his way across Hyrule, I instead saw young Link rushing through the Deku Tree, then making a beeline for the Temple of Time and immediately becoming an adult, already armed with the Hookshot, Iron Boots, and Din's Fire. Within 4 hours, Link had already warped back and forth in time half a dozen times, picking up key items in every possible nook and cranny in Hyrule, from shops and Deku scrubs to even random grottos. All of this is simply par for the course in what is known as Ocarina of Time Randomizer, or Zooter. All the same dungeons, enemies, and bosses, except that the items located within the game are randomly distributed throughout the entirety of Hyrule. The most basic version of this challenge takes every item that can be found in a treasure chest and randomly mixes them up so that a chest holding 5 rupees suddenly holds the fairy bow, while the chest holding the boomerang only has a Deku stick inside. Depending on how you want to challenge yourself, you can mix up the dungeon keys, throw in the 100 golden scatolas, and even have the cows give you something when you play Epona's song. The method behind this madness is hidden within the logic of the game itself. The creative minds behind the Zooter system have figured out the necessary requirements needed to reach each item location in the game. With that information, they programmed the game creation system to ensure that every item is obtainable within the logic of the game. For example, you'll never find Din's fire within the Shadow Temple, because Din's fire is needed to enter the Shadow Temple. The only way bombs could be behind a wall would be if you had access to bombs from somewhere else. And if you don't have Zelda's lullaby, you've effectively eliminated the Water Temple as a place to search for needed items. With this setup of item knowledge, use, and locations, the world of Zelda suddenly becomes more akin to a Metroidvania title, taking items hidden in random locations and using them to access areas that you may note of to look into later. The fun in the game comes in the use of that item logic, turning the entirety of Hyrule into one giant maze. Successfully beating one of the randomizers, therefore, involves a thorough knowledge of not just the usual gameplay, but of every potential secret Hyrule has to offer. The first time I challenged myself to a randomizer, I found myself stuck, running frantically between dungeons and areas, trying to figure out what chest I could have possibly missed that would unlock something, anything, that would resemble a way forward. I recall distinctly looking for either Zelda's Lullaby, Epona's Song, or the Longshot to give me access to a new area. Then, after over an hour of jumping back and forth, revisiting every dungeon several times, and racking my brain to no end, I discovered a single open grotto in Hyrule Field that I had no idea ever existed. And I've played this game since it was released back in 1998. I laugh at that frustration now. Over the last 6 months, I've learned well over a dozen new uses of items and other fun little tricks that come from playing a game not just over and over, but over and over with different goals in mind. I know how to get into the Water Temple without the Iron Boots, how to stop Link the Goron without bombs, how to reach the roofs of Kakariko without a hookshot. I've tried my hand at several levels of difficulty, even mixing up not just the items, but where entrances and exits lead, creating an entirely new layout for Hyrule. I won't say I know how to manipulate this game in any way like what the Zooter speedrunners can do, but I think I'm doing well, and I look forward to the next time I decide to take that challenge. There are randomizers for most of the mainline Zelda titles. I've played a few for A Link to the Past, I've seen one for Wind Waker, I've heard about them for Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, and I've even heard rumors for a Breath of the Wild randomizer. All of them new and exciting ways to explore a world that we love, and yet perhaps have never taken the time to truly see everything that it has to offer. I love these games. I love these stories. They're the primary reason why I keep coming back to this series. But having this chance to look at these worlds in a new way has given me newfound appreciation for the worlds that these games have created, and for the work that goes into creating them. An appreciation that lives on in a piece of my heart. I'm Connor Schultz, and this has been Peace of Heart. I'll see you next time.
Thank you, Connor. The randomizer specifically for Ocarina of Time is something I am very, very, very experienced at. And any opportunity to get people an Ocarina of Time randomizer is something I always love. If you have not played Ocarina of Time randomizer, do it.
Yeah, well, I did it once and I cried.
Okay, so in fairness, though, we should not have had your first thing be a multi-world.
I cried.
Yeah, so I've learned how, at this point, how to introduce people to the randomizer, and that was the wrong way to do it. Because I just introduced my friend to the randomizer, like, a couple days ago, and I basically, like, walked him through every single thing, and one of our lovely friend, Dave, the Missing Link, actually made a tracker for the randomizers that are actually, it's actually incredible. That has like a map and full, a lot of great logic stuff built in. It's really, really, really nice. And that's how I do it. But the randomizers are what are, especially Ocarina. Ocarina's rando is super fun, but it also can be super painful.
Yes.
Depending on your settings. And I've had really, really, really rough seeds.
Yeah, me too.
Like, yeah, that one.
Remember just walking away, just actual tears, just crying, and getting Dan to come in and just be like, I can't get it to do anything.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough.
Oh, that was bad.
Has that burned you from doing any randomizer ever again?
Yep.
Not
really. I wouldn't mind doing one. I still want to do a Super Mario Brothers 3 rando.
I'm so used to doing Zelda-based randomizers that I kind of think that's all I'm able to do at this point. So I started dabbling in A Link to the Past recently. I have done one Wind Waker randomizer, and I have attempted the Majora's Mask randomizer.
That sounds terrifying.
Majora is actually scary, because you legit, I think, need, like, major notes, because you need to remember where everything spawns for every other check. And it's just, oh, boy. With that, though, let's move on to our lovely new segment from Josh.
Hi, everyone. This is Joshua Lindquist. It's been quite a while since I was on the podcast, but I have something new to talk about. Anyone that knows me knows that I am constantly replaying Zelda games. I have played most of them so many times that I often skip most of the extra content. However, during my most recent replays, I've begun paying more attention to small details. Taking time to speak to everyone, looking for hints about what to do next, completing more side quests, and otherwise playing the games more like I would if I were playing for the first time. Because of this, I am taking note of features, characters, enemies that have not appeared in a new Zelda game recently, or that appeared once and never showed up again. So I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about a feature that I want to see again, and that is trading sequences. For anyone unfamiliar, the trading sequences are usually optional quests where Link is given or earns a unique item that is then traded to another character in exchange for a different unique item. The new item is then traded to someone else, and the process repeats until you earn a final reward. The Zelda team has experimented with multiple types of trading sequences to find what works best. But the very first trading sequence appears in Link's Awakening. It's the trading sequence that I love the most, but that is entirely nostalgia. It is probably the worst designed trading sequence in the series. That is in part because it is the only trading sequence that is required to complete the game. A common criticism of some trading sequences is that you must talk to everyone to find the right person to trade with. Even if you explore thoroughly, it's easy to miss the right person or to miss the dialogue that gives you the clue that you need. I have witnessed this many times watching people play Link's Awakening for the first time. There are bottlenecks built into the game that prevent you from proceeding without figuring out the trading sequence, and the final dungeon cannot be cleared unless you complete the whole sequence. The Zelda team seems to have learned a lesson from Link's Awakening, because every other trading sequence is optional. Ocarina of Time took a different approach by making the trading sequence feature less exploration and talking to townsfolk, and more time challenges, where you're told to run from point A to point B in a few minutes. Majora's Mask took it a step further and removed all the guesswork. The trading sequence takes place only with Deku Scrub merchants, who essentially trade Deku flowers with you. You can only earn pieces of heart, but you earn one at every step of the trading sequence, and there is no final reward. I'm not really a fan of how Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask handle the trading sequences. They are interesting experiments, but I think they fall short of what makes a trading sequence engaging. What I enjoy most is getting to know the different characters. I like meeting them and learning about their troubles before I have the means to help them. Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages return to the style of trading sequence that Link's Awakening introduced, but they make the whole thing optional and offer an amazing reward. In this case, it's an upgraded sword. In Oracle of Seasons, you can encounter many characters early on who are looking for something specific, but you won't be able to help them until much later. Speaking to each of them early on helps you learn about the characters in a way that would otherwise be unnecessary. I really enjoyed this part of my most recent playthrough. I spoke to everyone in and around the town, and it was obvious that many of them would be involved in the trading sequence. I kept mental notes of what I learned, and returned to those characters whenever I got new items. Now, I should probably add the disclaimer that I grew up in the 90s, and still very much enjoy games with an older style of game design. So a game requiring me to talk to everyone does not feel like a cumbersome task. It's just how I expect some games to work. It's not a problem for me, but it would be a problem for most other people. It's not a modern type of game design, and even I don't expect to talk to every NPC in a new game. So if trading sequences were to return, we need to make some adjustments. Trading sequences of this style made their final appearance in Phantom Hourglass. This quest is shorter than most of the others, but its one unique feature is that you must complete a different side quest to finish the trading sequence. This is a minor detail in Phantom Hourglass, but I think it's an interesting idea that could be explored more in the future. And that's all of them, right? Well, kind of. I suspect at least a few people are already upset that I skipped the Wind Waker, but there's a good reason for it. It's not really the same kind of trading sequence. The other trading sequences are about trading unique items in a sequential order. The Wind Waker instead gives you the task of helping the merchant Zunari fill his store with different goods. You trade merchandise with other merchants to increase the variety available at Zunari's shop. Along the way, you encounter merchants who offer goods you already have, but you may need them again to find something new. You do get some rewards for your efforts, but ultimately it's a quest where you play the role of an employee for a store rather than a quest where you help solve a series of problems. Still, it's an interesting quest, and maybe it can also inspire a future trading sequence. So that finally brings me to the main point. Trading sequences vanished from the series after Phantom Hourglass, 15 years ago. The Legend of Zelda has changed a lot since then. Can a trading sequence side quest really fit into the modern franchise? I think it could. Breath of the Wild features a large quest log. What are the quests about? Well, they're mostly about solving mysteries and helping people. That sounds familiar. I think the quest log can solve the problem of missing or forgetting important hints. When you speak to someone who mentions a problem, it's registered in the quest log. Maybe it even tells you the exact item the person needs. If that feels too heavy-handed, then perhaps the quest items you have right now can be prominently displayed in the quest log. And yeah, I said items. I think a modern, open-world Zelda game should include multiple trading sequences, and I think they could add more complexity by adding branching paths. Learning about the ordinary people of the Zelda world is what makes the trading sequences fun. What if the same item could be given to three different people, and the stories of those individuals change depending on who you choose? Or maybe multiple items could solve the troubles of the same individual and lead to different outcomes. I think there's a lot of potential ideas to explore. Maybe the trading sequences can lead into other quests, like helping to open a shop, before continuing with more trades. I really like the trading sequences as an alternative to collectathons and simple gathering side quests. It only took me a few minutes to come up with these ideas for a modern trading sequence, and I'm sure the Zelda team could make something even better. I think it's time for a modern trading sequence.
You know, I have to say, the trading sequence in Ocarina of Time, when the Goron needed the eye drops, I felt so bad for him the whole time in that trading sequence, because like he just wanted to feel better. And it just like, it made me like, I got very emotional at that trading sequence, and I should not have.
Aww. I also find it really funny that like, you never think about the medical system in Zelda games until you all of a sudden need an optometrist and a prescription for eye drops.
Yeah.
Which begs the question, how does the medical system work in Hyrule? Is it, like, insurance? Is it universal? Like, how, like, you all have, like, mystical ability? Is it, like, D&D rules where, like, you can get, like, cure wounds or something? Like, I don't, what?
Well, potions exist, so.
Yeah, so there's got to be some level of arcane.
Yeah, like, I don't know exactly, because, like, I feel like the potions are just their version of medicine, and eye drops exist, clearly, and you never see, like, doctors in the game, I don't think.
You see one in Twilight Princess, but that's not a trading sequence, per se.
That's true.
And what, Twilight Princess is? No, Twilight Princess is after Ocarina, so.
Yeah, because Twilight Princess it plays just like Ocarina.
It's a thing. I don't know. You don't want to have a segment and a sequence that just like takes forever, because it's like, I don't want to have to do this. I don't want to have to travel across Hyrule four times.
Ugh. The one in Link's Awakening is fun because like, you don't have to do it. It's just fun. And you can just kind of do it at your leisure.
Yeah. 100%.
But yeah, I don't like it when you're just constantly going back and forth, and you feel like they just put it in there for filler. Like, that, not so much. But if there's, like, some purpose to it, and, like, you get emotionally attached to it, like I did with the Goron, whose eye was hurting, and I just wanted him to feel better.
Oh, yeah. And plus, you get a cool sword as a result. You get a sword that you could cheese, the entire game with, which is awesome. I mean, I would love to see more of it. I just hope they're not, like, super long-winded. Because I feel like, even though, like, the trade sequence with Tingle from Wind Waker is not really a trading sequence per se, like, they still cut a lot of it, so we didn't have to do it, which was good. So, I think if it's done tactfully, maybe that'll be a good thing.
Right. If it doesn't, like, feel like, oh, trading sequence. Kind of like how the medley escort mission didn't really feel like an escort mission.
Well, that was because it's part of the dungeon, correct?
Yeah, but I mean, it's still like an escort mission. You're not just like, oh, you know, like you are when you're carrying Rudo through the Jabu Jabu.
Fair. Yeah, I think that actually covers everything on our podcast today.
I think it does, yeah.
So thank you guys so much for listening. Quick reminder that we are on all sorts of platforms, so make sure you subscribe to wherever you listen to your podcast, and check out all the other cool podcasts. If you've missed a bunch, go take a listen and catch up.
So you can find our website, ZeldaUniverse.net. We are on social media on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. We're also on Twitch. You can find us. We're either Zelda Universe or Zelda Universe TV on the different platforms. So you will find us that way. Alex and I both stream on Twitch. You can find us on the Zelda Universe YouTube channel at times.
You can always find me at Luca_Starks on most internet places, TikTok, Twitch, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Amanda Van Heil. You can find me on Twitch at Panda Princessa. That's Panda Princess and then an A at the end. And then also on Instagram, I'm Panda Princessa Streams, where I pretty much just tell you, hey, guess what? I'm streaming, and I post pictures of my cats.
Yeah, that's basically all we got. And with that, I will pass it over to Eden for our favorite segment, credits. Thanks for listening.
See you guys later.
Welcome to the ZUBC's Credits Club, where we've got all the hottest ZUBC staff members hitting the dance floor. Let's check them out. Here are the hosts of episode 21 themselves, Amanda Van Hyl and Alex Rosenberg, just ripping up the floor after another job well done. Oh, and over there, Shona Johnson's doing an American football-esque victory dance to celebrate the conclusion of her Zelda history series. Let it all out, Shona! Randy Marr is off to the side, playing the Majora's Mask-like game Outer Wilds and screaming about brambles and anglerfish. You do you, man. In the middle of the dance floor, we have Connor Schultz, who is basically flailing his body around randomly and somewhat violently, probably as an avant-garde tribute to Ocarina of Time randomizers, the subject of this episode's installment of Peace of Heart. Keep your distance for safety, folks. Longtime friend and newest For Realsies member of the ZUBC, Joshua Lindquist, is boogieing his way around the dance floor while handing strange objects to the other dancers to satisfy his desire for trade sequences in Zelda. Not sure this counts, though. The other clubgoers aren't giving him anything in return. I'm Eden Biskin, your executive producer, Zelda Universe Forums liaison, and club DJ for tonight. Cody Davies, our consulting producer, is the one currently attempting to rip up the dance floor literally by attacking it with a shovel. Cody, that floor costs money. Please stop. Kelly Timmerman, as our head editor, is sitting on the sidelines, recovering from a long editing session. Take a load off, Kelly! Mary Stowe, our social media liaison, is taking videos of the club on her phone, probably for Zelda Universe's TikTok. Make sure you get my good side, Mary. And finally, up in the booth are our graphic designers, Alexandria Gribble and Caden Garvey. Thanks for lighting up the party for real. This club and its associated podcast are shindigs of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe's media team. You'll find this party wherever you get your podcasts, including on YouTube. Got feedback? Direct it to podcast@zeldauniverse.net, the ZUcast hub thread on the ZU forums, at Zelda Universe on Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok, or at Zelda Universe TV on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch. Well, they say the party doesn't stop, but it's gotta. At least for now. Thanks for stopping by the Credits Club, and we'll catch you on the flip side. Go play Legends Arceus.
I feel like we now need like a morning zoo like announcement style. It's like ZooCast, pew 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 pew. I don't know why that came into my head just now, but it's
welcome
there.
Welcome to ZooCast, pew pew.
All the sound effects for all the things.
Yep. Oof. Yeah. I'm also thinking of just seeing Cats with Elias, and it was just—it was really funny.
Next time we get together, we should watch it again, but like completely plastered.
I was going to say, I need alcohol because I watched that movie sober.
I don't recommend it.
Sober.
I don't recommend it.
I like how Elias's least favorite were Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer. And well, yes, of course you hate the mischievous cats.
That also was not that version of that song was the original too. Like from London, which is not the one that's on the license, which is, I think, better, but... besides the point.
Yeah. That's a whole other. He just did not like them because they committed mischief, and that was why. He's like, these are the worst cats. I'm going, yep. Yeah, I could see why you don't like them.
Oh, okay. Okay, Elias. This is a topic for another podcast.
Okay, God, sorry. Sorry, Kelly.
We could spend so much time on this.
Welcome to the ZU. Oh, God, that was loud.
Yeah, it seriously feels like it was just like last year all of it.
Yeah. Why did, you know, time is a weird soup, and I don't like it.
All played on an ocarina.
Correct. Very chunky. Chunky ocarina soup.
That sounds gross. Remember when we licked the cartridge?
Yeah, and I didn't think it was that bad.
I did, but I'd also just eaten a banana.
That is also true. So that probably,
and so maybe that was why.
That's probably why. Because, you know, sometimes, you know how, like, sometimes you'll eat something, like, super savory, and then you'll try something sweet, and then it's just, something just does not meld?
Yep.
That mix is just, like, not there. That's kind of basically what that was.